the Republicans to wake up is... The Republican Party right now is not led by conservatives. There's a population out there that has to be told the truth. We have to do it live!
Now, from the Left Coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
Thanks for downloading the very latest in-depth interview podcast from peterbcollins.com. You're about to hear a very important conversation that could try to reduce the corruption in American politics. Lawrence Lessig is a professor of law at Harvard University, and he has started Mayday.us. He's raised millions of dollars to support candidates who, if they're elected, will support significant reforms in our campaign finance system. And speaking of money, this podcast is made possible by people like Dick Atlee, Terry Paris, Andy Bettmanis, and Don Cisney. They are monthly subscribers who kick in $5. Have you got $5 a month you can use to support this podcast? If you nodded your head or blurted out, yeah, come on over to peterbcollins.com. Under my picture, follow the link that says sign up. Takes you to a page where you choose $5, $10, $20 a month, or our best deal, the $50 annual subscription. New annual subscribers in the U.S. of A. get a bonus copy of Red Flag. It's got 10 great songs by John Dist, and you will want to add this to your collection. Time to get the money out of politics. Professor Lawrence Lessig joins us today to talk about Mayday. Elvis Costello opens our segment today. It's called Clean Money. And when it comes to funding political campaigns, is there such a thing as clean money? Well, we certainly know the opposite. There's a lot of dirty money, a lot of dark money, and a lot of just plain out corrupting money that is buying elections these days. Lawrence Lessig is a professor in the law school at Harvard and joins us today to talk about the Mayday PAC and related issues. Professor, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Before we dive in, I just wanted to talk a little bit about Aaron Swartz. We interviewed the filmmaker Brian Knappenberger back in June and got a lot of reaction to that podcast and to the new film about the life of Aaron Swartz. And it really touched me that he certainly saw you as a mentor, and you described this brilliant young man as a mentor to you. Tell us a bit, would you?
Well, you know, Aaron was someone who died at the age of 26. I'd known him for about 12 years, and I'd worked closely with him. He had been the technical architect behind Creative Commons. We had conspired on a whole bunch of projects related to free culture and free knowledge. And he was the person who ultimately got me to shift my work from copyright and internet policy to take up the cause against the corruption of our political system. And he was one of the founding board members of the first organization I started to do that, something called Change Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an inspiration throughout that whole process. So, I think of him more as my mentor than the other way around, because he had such a pureness and integrity to his soul that I don't think I've ever met anybody like that before.
And his own political organizing skills, as were demonstrated in the successful effort to beat SOPA and PIPA, really stand out, don't they?
Yeah, that's right. And what was striking about that was his willingness to encourage a wide range of people to step up and do what they thought they needed to do. So his mantra was everybody should own their own contribution, and there shouldn't be anybody who has to get permission to do what they think is right. And that encouraged a wide range of people to do everything they could, which turned out to be one of the most surprising, powerful political movements that we've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just wanted to get your comments because if people haven't seen it yet, I think that this film did a great job in, you know, really honoring his legacy and also describing the awful prosecution that was targeted at him. And I'll note that he was, you know, under a great deal of pressure from the legal cases at the very same time he was leading that political activism.
Yeah, he was. And, you know, unfortunately, the issue that he got tied up with, you know, he was charged with downloading too many academic articles that they thought he was going to make available on the net, you know, was important to him, but it certainly wasn't the most important issue to him. There were so many other issues he was working on. And I think that, you know, the tragedy is that this would have so consumed his life and then led to his death when, you know, regardless of whether you think what he did was right or wrong, it's hard to believe that it merited the kind of fierce government intervention to punish it that ultimately led him to despair of any reason to go forward.
Indeed, yeah. And one other somewhat personal line of questioning, if I may, before we talk about May Day. You were at Stanford for many years, and when Congressman Tom Lantos died in office, you were running for that post. And I was excited to hear that you were interested in serving in Congress. And then the political machinery took hold, and as I recall, Joe Kotchett, the very powerful trial lawyer, intervened on behalf of Jackie Speer. And I don't know the details, but you left the race. Were you squeezed out? And does that episode in any way inform your efforts to reform the political system, at least as it applies to campaign funding?
Well, actually, that's not quite right. So what happened was, when Tom Lantos died, I had just started this work with Aaron on trying to build this movement and understanding about how to change the corrupting influence of money in Washington. And a bunch of people said, well, if this is what you want to do, why don't you run for Congress? So a group in, really it started out here in Boston, launched a draft Lessig campaign, and they raised close to $100,000 to help fund and get the campaign going. And I thought about it very seriously. I mean, we did some polling, and you know, the two things that ultimately made me decide not to run were, number one, Joe Trippi, who, you know, ran Howard Dean's campaign. He flew in and said he would run the campaign for me. But he said to me, you've got to be willing to promise me that for every day from today until the day you decide to retire from politics, you will sit down and get on the phone and spend at least 2, ideally 4 hours calling people to raise money. And I said, well, you know, Joe, I can just send them emails. He said, no, you have to sit down and get on the phone and be willing to call them every day, 6 days a week. He said, if you can't promise that, there's no reason for us to do anything. And I, you know, first of all, realized I couldn't promise that because I just literally could not imagine myself being able to do that. Led me to wonder who is able to do that, but, you know, put that aside.
Yeah.
But the second really important issue is, you know, Jackie Speer is an amazing congresswoman. She was an amazing public official up to that point. Our polling indicated that she was the most popular politician in California by far. Nobody came close to her. So not only was the future the life that I was being told I had to live, one that I just couldn't imagine living.
Yeah.
It was hard to find in Jackie Speier a reason to run, because she wasn't, the kind of traditional corrupt politician that you're trying to oppose.
Well, I've known Jackie.
I realized. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. You go ahead, and then I'll see.
Yeah, and finally I realized that to do what I wanted to do, which was trying to build a movement to change the system, it was better to be outside the system to do that. Because if I had stepped in and spent 2 to 4 hours every day calling people to raise money, increasingly I think I would have found it hard to, with integrity, stand up and say, this system's got to change because, I'm living by the system. So
yeah.
All of that led me in the end to decide that I wouldn't be running.
Well, I certainly agree with your appraisal. I've known Jackie Speier since she served in Sacramento. She worked very hard to reform insurance and financial institution issues. And she has really shown in her new role in Congress, leading the fight against sexual assault in the military and a number of other critical issues. So I understand that particular point. And, I do think that Speier has done a good job. She does not, to my knowledge, though, focus on reforming our campaign structure, does she?
She doesn't. Although she's supportive of these reforms, and she would, I'm sure, vote to support these reforms. This isn't her primary cause.
So let's talk about May Day, and I want people to go to your website at mayday.us, and you have called May Day the international distress signal over the corruption in our system. Give us a little background on the mission of your project.
Well, what we've found in the last really 2 years since Aaron died is two things. Number one, Americans are absolutely convinced that this problem has got to be solved. We did a poll at the end of last year and found 96% of Americans believe it important to reduce the influence of money in politics. But at the same time, 91% of Americans in that same poll said that they don't think it's possible. This is not going to happen. So those two numbers together are kind of the politics of resignation. People just don't think there's any reason to do anything about this because they don't think anything can be done. And that explains largely why in many political campaigns, the political experts come in and say there's no reason to talk about this issue because it, in fact, won't move any votes. And it won't move votes because people don't think you can do anything about it. So they kind of accept it. It's just one of the realities of life, like death and taxes and a corrupt political system. Those three things are at the core of the nature of democracy. But what we realized is, in fact, there is stuff that can be done. It doesn't even require a constitutional amendment to fix this problem in its first important step by changing the way elections are funded. And if we could begin to give people a sense of how it could be done, Harvey Milk's phrase, just give them hope, but give them hope that there's a way that this can be done, we could unleash incredible passion and energy to try to bring about this kind of reform. And that's what really sparked the idea of May Day, which was, what if we put together a super PAC powerful enough to win a Congress committed to fundamental reform in a very short time? We want to do it by 2016. People said, well, how are people going to believe in such a super PAC? Why would you think you could raise the kind of money? So we set ourselves a series of targets. We said, okay, let's do the first impossible task. Let's raise $1 million in 30 days. When we announced that, people said I was crazy, it could never be done, but we did it in 13 days, and then that $1 million got matched by six people who committed $1 million, so we had $2 million. Then I said we're going to raise $5 million in 30 days, and again, people said that would be impossible. All the people who said that the $1 million was impossible turned around and said, okay, no, I knew you could do the million, but you can't possibly do the $5 million. But again, on the last day, 9 o'clock Eastern time on July 4th, we crossed the $5 million mark. And I'm in the process now of trying to get that $5 million matched, too. And the point for these campaigns was to raise enough money to run pilot campaigns in 5 to 8 races to demonstrate that, indeed, if you talked about this issue in the right way, voters would vote on the basis of this issue. They would either vote for people on the basis of this issue, or vote against people on the basis of this issue, but this issue could matter in elections. And if we can demonstrate that, this is kind of a Roger Bannister moment. You remember Roger Bannister proved that you could run a mile in less than 4 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody said it was impossible, but he did it. if we can be a Roger Bannister in the political space by demonstrating people care about this issue, then when we get to the next election cycle, there will be many, many more people interested in supporting this, and also many more members of Congress eager to get on the right side of this issue.
So now you're doing what Joe Trippi demanded of you, but it may not be for a lifetime.
Yeah, it's a short term for me. And unfortunately, I'm actually not on the phone much because, you know, we've had more than 60,000 people contribute to this, and they just do it online. I mean, it was the most astonishing thing for me was when we launched this, we launched it on May 1st, May Day, we did it with no promotion. You know, there was no ads, there was no special articles in newspapers. We just put up a blog post, we put up a website, I tweeted it, we sent it out to people on the related organization, Root Strikers, at a list. And, we raised $300,000 within 2 days, and then our servers melted because we just hadn't expected that level of excitement. So we had to rebuild the system, and that's what really slowed us. We would have crossed $1 million in a week had we not lost the servers. That's, I think, testament to the fact that this issue is really important to people. And when they begin to see something that suggests how we could address it and do something about it, they're willing to step up and do something.
Well, Professor, I fully support this. And I appreciate you, finding the resources and having the imagination to pull all this together. John Nichols and Bob McChesney published a book last year called Dollarocracy. And their total count for political spending, dark money, reported money, political parties, all of it at the local, state, and federal levels in 2012 amounted to nearly $10 billion. And we know that that money most often is used to keep things from happening. So, for example, addressing climate change, there's a lot of money in the system that keeps our political leaders from taking any meaningful action on that very critical issue.
Yeah, and it's not just that issue. I mean, this is the point that I think people increasingly recognize. It's every issue, every single important issue, whether it's on the left or on the right, so climate change or healthcare policy or financial reform or simpler taxes, smaller government, dealing with the debt, all of those are issues which are impossible to deal with sensibly so long as we fund campaigns the way we do.
And Professor, I just want to tell you a little bit about myself, because in 1992, I got my friend, retired Congressman Pete McCloskey, to volunteer to serve on a political action committee organizing group. And we were setting up what we called the Death Star PAC. And our idea was that we were going to raise money from the members of our radio audience and give it only to candidates who promised to reform the system. And we announced it on the air, and then the station manager called me in for one of those ugly meetings, and he told me that I couldn't do it, and that the reason was that the company, this was KNBR Radio in San Francisco, and it was owned by an operation called Susquehanna out of Pennsylvania. And he said, "Our company has a PAC, Peter, and we don't want you embarrassing us by suggesting that there's something wrong with that." And so my effort got killed in the executive suites. But I think that this is an important way of using the system. And, you've raised almost $8 million to date to take on the much bigger money that has the corrupting influence. And so I fully support this. Give us an idea of the range of support that you've found across partisan lines and from people who are simply fed up with our system.
Well, I said we've had 60,000 contributions as of the beginning of August. We've had people on the right and people on the left. One of our matching contributors came from Peter Thiel, who's a famous libertarian in mm-hmm. Silicon Valley. But matching him was Reid Hoffman, co-founder of LinkedIn, who's obviously somebody who's very liberal in the system. So we've had liberals and libertarians and conservatives support this change, because I think everybody can see how, even if they don't have a common goal with people on the other side, they do see a common enemy, which is the way this corrupting influence of money blocks things. But if you go to our website, which is at mayday.us, you can see this data. If you go to the very bottom, you can see a link to our donors. And on our donors page, you can see all of the contributions through the beginning of August, broken down by $10, $20, $40, all the way up to $500,000 contribution. So the total number of those and the value of all of those added together. And then we've made available the list of the top donors, people who gave $10,000 or more. And then you can see a map of the United States, which has where all the donations come from, which is quite interesting. Some places are quite, in the middle of the country where there's, or the West, where there's basically deserts. It turns out deserts don't give us a lot of money, but we've had a lot of support on both coasts and right in the center, too. So we've been trying to be as transparent as possible. You started by saying there's dark money, and could there be good money towards persuading politicians? Our view is we're adopting the highest standards we can of transparency, both of donors and also of expenditures, and we accept no anonymized donations, which is what many super PACs are able to do, because organizations called C4s are able to give money to super PACs and hide the donors to the C4s. We won't accept that kind of contribution.
Can I interrupt just for a moment there, because so much has been made of Lois Lerner and the IRS office in Cincinnati that reviews the applications for nonprofit status. And the, you know, this has been turned into Nixon's enemies list and a repeat of that episode from so many years ago. But in fact, I think the IRS has even a greater obligation than it has shown to scrutinize these applications from political operatives of any stripe, because there is no purpose other than obscuring where the money came from to operate political entities under the 501 section of the Internal Revenue Code for nonprofits.
Yeah, I think that they need to be aggressive in making sure that the groups are getting this standing, the status, the special tax status, for good reason. I will say, though, that I think it's more inept than it is any malicious purpose. They've done a very poor job in convincing the public they're doing it in a neutral way. Even if one believes that they are, this has developed in a way that makes people very skeptical, or at least makes a significant portion of America very skeptical. And the job of the IRS is to convince all sides that they're being as balanced as they possibly can. So I'm a supporter of trying to clear this up as quickly as we can in whatever way we can, because I do think that it's important that they be able to enforce the law, and we shouldn't be wasting potential tax revenue on improperly certified organizations.
Indeed, yeah. So when you look at the flow of money into our political system, if you had to rank the worst of the worst, what would those sources be?
Well, I think the biggest problem right now is, in fact, the kind of organizations we set up, super PACs. Now, super PACs are independent political action committees, meaning they don't coordinate with campaigns. We're not allowed to talk to a campaign to, figure out what they're doing so we can add what we're doing to them. We have no contact at all. But that's not the problem, the idea of an independent political action committee. What's the problem is that these independent political action committees, because of a decision by a lower court, not even the Supreme Court, are able to take unlimited contributions. So, Rahm Emanuel in Chicago has set up such a super PAC. Five billionaires have provided the funding for that super PAC. That super PAC will have more money than God in Chicago. And it will determine election after election in Chicago, And if you're a politician in Chicago, you know you've got to be on the right side of that super PAC. And that super PAC obviously will be Rahm Emanuel's, tool. Now, I'm sure Rahm and Democrats, or at least Democrats with Rahm, like the idea of him being so effective or influential. But anybody who thinks about the way a democracy is supposed to work has got to be troubled by that. Because this idea that we have given tiny, tiny group of Americans such enormous power in our political system is destructive of the design of this political system, which was not to allocate power on the basis of wealth. That might have been the rule if we were an aristocracy or a plutocracy or a kleptocracy, but we're not. We're supposed to be a representative democracy. And the idea that we allow this to happen in a representative democracy is outrageous. And so I think that's the critical problem that we've got to find a way to solve.
And Professor, since you raised Rahm Emanuel, I still haven't gotten over that when he was White House Chief of Staff, during the period of time when they were working on health care reform, that he insisted that single payer could not be even introduced or discussed. And he was candid with many that he was using the health care reform process to line up cash for the next election cycle. And yeah. And that, to me, really, demonstrates the very sinister ways that money in politics and the relationships that they generate, that influence has on our system.
Absolutely. And, and Rahm was being honest about what is the honest truth in the way the system works. I interviewed Larry Pressler for my book. Larry Pressler, of course, the former senator from South Dakota, a Republican who's now running as an independent in South Dakota. He's famous because he was the only member of Congress to turn down the bribe in the Abscam scandal. And there's, great video of him being outraged at the idea of being bribed like that. So he's a very honest, decent person who's, on the right, but I think has been, very important to this movement. But when he sat down with me, he said, the most striking thing about the healthcare debate is that the word single payer system was never uttered by anybody, and that's because it had been made clear not just by Rahm Emanuel, but all the insiders that it was not to be used. Those words were not to be used, because had they been used, you would have seen tens of millions of dollars from the insurance companies being targeted against the Democratic Party. And that's just the way politics works right now in Washington.
Yeah. So, Professor, you've raised almost $8 million. What are you going to do with it?
Well, we've got one more stage of the fundraising where we're trying to get the last $5 million matched. So we'll have $12 to $13 million. We want to run in 5 to 8 races. Basically, 5 races will be, deep, serious races. We've announced 2 of those so far. One is in Iowa, in the Iowa 3rd district, where Stacey Appel is running for Congress. She's a Democrat. Mm-hmm. And one is in New Hampshire. We're supporting the only Republican in the only Republican in the nation to make change in the way campaigns are funded a fundamental issue in his campaign. And so those were the first two campaigns.
And that's Jim Rubens, by the way.
That's right, Jim Rubens. And so we'll have another 3 that we'll be announcing at the end of the month. But today we announced 3 more, which will be not as big, but, just as important. One supporting Carol Shea Porter, who's a Democrat, who's been a big reformer in New Hampshire. One supporting Walter Jones, who is a Republican in North Carolina, who's supported reform for many, many years.
He's a man with a conscience who has spoken up even when it was very politically difficult for him.
Yeah, and many of the things he said I've had a lot of problems with. But, this is the point. We're trying to build a movement that's not just about what we agree with, but bring people who we disagree with into a common agreement about this fundamental problem. And finally, we're supporting, in a Democratic primary, we're picking one Democrat against the other, a guy named Ruben Gallego in Arizona 7, who is a young former Marine who is a very strong reform candidate who is running in the primary, which will be held in the last part of August. So these races, it's important for us to be in, but obviously a lot of them are quicker and they'll be easier than the more difficult races that I think will be the core of what we're spending our money on.
Mm-hmm. And so will you give money directly to the candidates? Will you come in with outside advertising uncoordinated with the campaigns?
Well, we can't give them to the money to the candidates, but we will step in and run campaigns in each of these districts. Now, it'll differ depending on the districts and the time. So in Arizona and in the New Hampshire Republican primary, we only have a couple weeks, so we're just, you know, doing media buys. I've recorded a bunch of radio ads. We've done some digital media. We'll do some television in New Hampshire. All of those will be about, you know, just using media to leverage support for one candidate or the other. Mm-hmm. But in the other races, we are building field staff. So we're waiting until we have our field staff in place before we announce the last three big campaigns we're doing. But after we have field staff in place, we'll announce and we'll be, you know, running campaigns the way anybody runs campaigns, recruiting volunteers, turning people out to vote, you know, working as hard as we can to make the candidate we're supporting the victor.
Now, Professor Lessig, I recently was made aware of the spoof campaign of Gil Fulbright, who is challenging both Mitch McConnell and his Democratic counterpart, Allison Lundergan Grimes, in the Senate campaign in Kentucky. And the Gil Fulbright website, it's honestgil.com, features some really well-produced satirical commercials that you know, basically say that Gil Fulbright wants to run so that he can compromise himself for the biggest donors out there that he can find. Has your group had any interaction with the Gil Fulbright spoof campaign?
Yes. I'm a big admirer of what Represent.us has done because, you know, we're at a stage in American political history where satire is the most effective teacher. And when people watch those ads, and everybody has to because they are the most hilarious political ads anybody has ever seen,
you
are resonating with everything you think is wrong with the current system of politics. Now, we've heard a rumor, and I'm, you know, eager to see how this develops, that he's going to take some time off from his Kentucky campaign and travel to New Hampshire to challenge Jim Rubens, because his line, you know, his view is that Jim Rubens is going to ruin it for the rest of these people. So, you know, his question is, you're a Republican, what are you doing talking about ending the corrupting system of, you know, influence inside of Washington? So there might be a chance that we're going to see Gil Fulbright in New Hampshire as well.
All right, and let's take a minute here to listen to the audio track from one of the Gil Fulbright commercials. It's classic stuff.
Hi, I'm Gil Fulbright. The people who run my campaign, they've made this commercial, and I'm in it. This campaign, it's not about me. It's about crafting a version of me that'll appeal to you. A version that visits random work sites with paid actors pointing at things. A version of me that doesn't find old people loathsome or pointless. Has a conventionally attractive yet curiously still family. Listening to my constituents, legislating, these are things I don't do. What I do is spend about 70% of my time raising funds for re-election. I'd do anything to stay in office. My name's Gil Fulbright, but hell, I'll change my name to Phil Goldbright or Bill Fulbright or fill up my mouth with farts.
I don't know if I got the fill up my mouth with parts with farts part there, Professor, but I really enjoyed this, and I agree with you. I mean, John Stewart has demonstrated that people get more news from satire than they do from what passes for, you know, corporate news delivery in this country today.
That's right. And so we'll, you know, it's great to use whatever form we can. Let's send the message in every single form so that finally we can get people to understand it and rally behind it.
Well, Professor, I want to thank you for joining us today. And as you can tell, I really appreciate this effort that you've undertaken. My final question for you is, do you support the move to amend? And do you think that if we succeeded in overcoming all of the hurdles that it takes for a constitutional amendment to essentially overturn Citizens United and Buckley versus Valeo, would we not end up in front of the Supreme Court again? And isn't that a pretty risky long-term strategy? Yours does appear to have a better potential to really inform voters and activate them much sooner than a constitutional amendment might provide some corrective relief?
Well, I think it may well be necessary to amend the Constitution. I don't know whether that's true yet. There's some shoes left to fall, but it certainly may be necessary. But even if it is necessary, even if you're absolutely convinced we've got to get an amendment to the Constitution, what's the reality here is that we don't have a Congress anywhere close to supporting such an amendment. You know, it takes two-thirds of Congress to propose an amendment and then three-fourths of the states to ratify it. So if you're imagining Congress proposing an amendment, we got to change Congress. And so what we're trying to do with the Mayday PAC is to create political movement to elect a Congress committed to reform. And that Congress is much more likely to propose any amendment than this Congress is. Now, I also support, I've also been, you know, participant with, you know, people who are trying to get the other path to an amendment out there, which is to get the states to call on Congress to propose an Article 5 convention that gets to propose its own amendments, again, have to be ratified by three-fourths. That, I think, is actually a more likely path to getting an amendment to the Constitution. But either way, I think the first step we've got to do is to get legislation passed that changes the way elections are funded. And that change will have an enormous effect and then put us in a position to decide whether the next step, an amendment, is necessary and how to do it.
You're the law professor here, but I have a little concern about a constitutional convention because it could be open to all kinds of proposed amendments driven by big money, which, of course, would still be in play. And we could end up with some very extreme proposals, not necessarily including addressing the campaign finance system.
Absolutely, we could. But my view is, first, they're just proposals. They only matter if they get ratified, and three-fourths of the states means that 38 states would have to ratify any such proposal. And I can't see any crazy proposal on either side getting 38 states to ratify it. So that's number one. But number two, there's a risk that a crazy proposal gets made. But there's a certainty that if we don't do something, our government will not be able to function because already it doesn't function. So I think we've got to, you know, look at the risks and be, you know, very serious about them, but recognize that doing nothing is also an incredibly risky strategy, and I think much more risky than pushing either for the kind of reform we're pushing for or for an Article 5 convention.
Harvard Law Professor Lawrence Lessig. Real pleasure talking with you. Thanks for your work, and I once again want to invite people to visit you at mayday.us.
Thank you very much.
We got a lot of work to do to clean up corruption, drain the swamp. Thanks for listening. Your comments are welcome. Peter at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you, keep smiling.